by ISIL for 10 months in Syria. That does it for our show. If you'd like to get a copy, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Caron, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, and Chuck Skurich. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Also special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, and Vesta Gadars. And our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Krug-Meadows, and Tarina Nadura. Happy New Year. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
The winter 2016 semester at Henry Ford College begins January 11th. Registration is currently open and available at hfcc.edu/webadvisor. Take advantage of HFC's tuition freeze guarantee. HFC also guarantees that no classes will be canceled throughout the semester for students who have registered and paid their tuition. Whether you're a recent high school graduate, military veteran, or wishes to earn your college degree, or professional seeking career training, HFC offers the resources to help you succeed. For further information about registering for the winter 2016 semester at HFC, contact the Office of Registration and Records, located in the Welcome Center, at 313-845-6403 or online at enrollmentservices@hfcc.edu.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Happy New Year, everybody. 2016, here we are. Hello and welcome to a new edition. Oh, they're always new. You know it. Yeah, of the new WHFR Journal. The first one in 2016. We made it. This is Jay Koronek here at WHFR. We're live in the studio. It's got to be crazy. A lot of professional broadcasters taking the day off, but Joe Sullivan was live this morning, and myself and my co-host, John Conroy, I can attest he is live too. Happy New Year, John.
And Happy New Year, Jay, and to all of our wonderful listeners.
Yes, it's a new year, time to get it right this time, you know. It's a way to look at it. I mean, the past is past, as somebody told me this morning, and already I've forgotten it, although we do have some shows to remind you about 2015. We're still continuing our music week, our end of the year music week today with the best of 2015 music. So Highway 61 today, and our other shows following after that, music shows, are supposed to be featuring the best songs, artists from 2015 that we feature here in WHFR, because we play things other stations don't. So our best of 2015 is unlike anybody else's, at commercial stations anyway. So hope you can stay with us all day from now on, all year, of course, because remember, WHFR, we're making waves. We're not doing the same things as other stations, and that, of course, is the whole point behind this particular hour's talk. Always with the new WHFR Journal, we have local news that you can't get almost anywhere else on the radio, and, of course, alternative opinions, usually shared by the guests in the studio. And remember, all opinions on this show,
yes, are the host's opinions, and not necessarily the opinions of WHFR or Henry Ford College.
That's right. Yep. although I hope so in some way, because it's always nice if other people agree or see things your way. But the idea is we're trying to challenge you, and so when we give opinions, you must not accept them and believe them outright, but maybe you want to jot down a note and do some research. You know, go search on the internet for a while on some of these topics for each show. And remember, all of our shows going back, well, I'm not sure how far. The last time I checked, it was back 7 years, which was really embarrassing to think about, John, all the things I got wrong and all the corrections I had to make over the after every show. But maybe you missed the last show or two. We didn't have a show on Christmas. If you're trying to say, where's the Christmas show? It's not on the podcast from WHFR.FM because we didn't do it. Okay, we had special winter season celebration shows. Hope you enjoyed those. A lot of those were really special, a lot of fun to record on our side. And I hope fun for you, entertaining and amazing in a way to listen to. But here we go.
So well, not mm-hmm. only have we done the are we making waves, but it's 30 years and we're just getting started on this wonderful radio
and now
station.
We have just begun our 31st year.
There we have.
There yes. you go. So getting older all the time and hopefully getting better. 2016 is WHFR's 31st year. I've got to change the sign here in the studio. I'm the one that does that sign, so that's my one of my jobs for today. Change your calendars, folks. That's right. It's January 1st. When did January 1st first begin? Now, there's a trivia question for you.
That's a good one.
I had to look that one up, of course, and what better than the History Channel, the History.com website. Anyway, 45 B.C. is when January 1st, New Year's Day, first began. It's the first time in history as the Julian calendar takes effect. And it was named after Roman dictator Julius Caesar. He happened to just become Roman dictator, and of course, so he called it after himself. You know, he decided the traditional Roman calendar was in dire need of reform. Introduced around the 7th century BC, the Roman calendar attempted to follow the lunar cycle, but frequently fell out of phase with the seasons and had to be corrected. In addition, the pontifices, the Roman body charged with overseeing the calendar, often abused its authority by adding days to extend political terms or interfere with elections. Typical politicians, okay.
So Julius Caesar was the first moon child, eh?
Right. And no, Caesar, he did away with the lunar one, and his astronomer, Sosigenes, Sosigenes, was an Alexandrian. You know, city of Alexandria was known for its great library and learning from the ages, the past ages. Of course, that library at Alexandria was destroyed by Christian groups 100 years or 200 years later because it had all that pagan belief. You know, all the knowledge of the ancients was there, and it was destroyed. But anyway, with Sosigenes, anyway, that's where it's written. But they decided the solar year was better, and our current calendar system is based on a solar year, by the way. And the Egyptians, who were pretty smart, too. They built those pyramids, huh? Yeah, I don't think I could do that.
No.
Okay. And, of course, I don't have 10,000 slaves at my command for 100 years. But anyway, and that wouldn't be nice anyway to do to them, would it? Hey, you got 100 years, all you 10,000, build me a pyramid, you know. And by the way, no wages.
Yep.
We'll just sort of feed you and water you every now and then. Okay, well, that wasn't fun. But anyway, that was where, with Caesar, the Julian calendar, we got to 365 and one quarter days. And Caesar added 67 days to 45 BC, making 46 BC begin on January 1st rather than in March. Okay, and in fact, shortly before Caesar's assassination, 2 years later, was he killed because of the calendar? No. He changed the name of the month Quintilis to Julius, July, after himself. And later, the month of Sextilis was renamed to Augustus, August, after his celebration of New Year's Day in January, fell out of practice during the Middle Ages. That's the way it goes. But he still got the month there. And, of course, there was still an 11-minute error And they had to add 7 days by the year 1000 and 10 days more by the mid-15th century. So the Roman Church became aware of the problem, and in the 1570s, Pope Gregory the 13th commissioned Jesuit astronomer, they always go to the intelligent people, Christopher Clavius, to come up with a new calendar. And of course, it wasn't called the Clavius calendar, it was called the Gregorian calendar for Pope Gregory. He made sure he got his name on it. That's what we have today. That's all straightened out, sort of. What I thought was interesting was, you know, how many different calendars we have. We all know that the Jewish celebrations happen at different periods of the year. Hanukkah is different each year, although usually somewhere at the end of the year. Certainly the Muslim religion has Ramadan, and that seems to be a different month each year. Sure. That changes. So yeah. Technically, they're on a different calendar. In fact, the Chinese New Year, the Chinese calendar, and it's the year of the monkey coming up, but it won't come up until later this month. Okay. So that's offset, too. That's not the same as the calendar that we have. But for the most part, the Gregorian calendar is common throughout most countries of the world, except for the major ones that I've just mentioned. And when I looked up different calendars, oh my gosh, and of course many of these are like the Mayan calendar, the Aztec calendar, they were different. It's interesting about the Mayan calendar, though, it's still accurate to today.
Wow.
How did they know about all those leap years and extra minutes and seconds of the path of the Earth around the sun? How did they know? They got it right. And so their calendar is the only one that's still on track. Of course, we don't use it anymore. And their calendar sort of ran out. I mean, it can be extended, but it ran out in 2012.
Oh.
That was the beginning of a new age, and everybody thought it might be the end of the world since the Mayan calendar ran out. But the other calendars haven't run out, folks, as far as we know. But the Mayans was totally accurate. How would that be possible thousands of years ago to start that?
Maybe they were aliens.
Okay, but in a news story just from a couple days ago, great hope is being put out by people supporting the Hanke Henry permanent calendar. And you may have not heard of this before, because I didn't hear of it before. If you've already heard of this, you can just tune out for the next minute. But Hanke, no, it's not Hokey Henry calendar. This is Hanke, H-A-N-K-E. Hanke. Maybe if it's German, it's pronounced that way. The permanent calendar is one of many examples of leap week calendars, calendars that maintain synchronization with the solar year by interchanging entire weeks rather than single days. So instead of a leap year each year, you'd have the same number of days in a year, but every 5 or 6 years, you'd have an extra week. And that week it wouldn't be part of a month. It would be called extra. And they propose it'd be coming between the end of December and January. So, hey, we get an extra week of vacation, right? Not necessarily, but I would hope so. Paid vacation would be nice. But the cute thing about the permanent calendar, it would save millions of dollars every year in administrative, that is business expenses. Because you'd never have to revise your calendar and figure out, like they do with a lot of contract negotiations, well, where is the Christmas vacation going to be this year? You know, can't be starting on this day or ending on that day or whatever. Where do we have the holidays? So that every day of the year would fall on the same day of the week.
Oh.
Okay. So whatever day, for example, that you were born on, if it was according, if it was when this calendar was already in place anyway, you would have that same birth date from then on.
Yeah.
Okay? So you might forget the day you were born, but you wouldn't forget the day of the week, probably. Okay. I know that I was born on Thursday, but it's only like 1 year every 7 or 8 when Thursday comes up again. Coincidentally, it seems like sort of a Christian proposal because Christmas, that is December 25th, falls on a Sunday always. It would always fall on Sunday. But think about it. It would save hundreds of millions of dollars worldwide if you don't have to spend any time at all redrawing the calendar, which means all those people that publish new printed calendars every year, they wouldn't have to change them. They could add things, you know, like who was born on this date or whatever, but it's always the same day of the week, so they have the same template there. Okay, so, and sure, you'd want a new calendar, but it still, it so that makes a lot of perfect sense, and I love that extra week. It'd be called a mini month, and they abbreviate it XTR for extra week. And it occurs every year that either begins or ends on a Thursday on the corresponding Gregorian channel calendar and falls between the end of December and beginning of January. Thus, each year always begins between December 28th and January 3rd in the Gregorian calendar. So that's because it's only 4 solid weeks, mm-hmm. 1 through 28 for each month. And then you got to do catch-up
right.
with that extra week every 6 years or so. So I think that'd be a great week for parties, you know. Whole extra week and paid time off and, well, whatever. I just thought, you know, you'd like to think about that. That permanent calendar idea is great. The proponents are now trying to get support. It would have to be approved, though, pretty much worldwide to make the change, and we know how worldwide opinion goes these days. Very kind difficult. Of hard to do, even if this makes total logical sense. That's the way it goes. Okay. Well, next I wanted to focus on, of course, resolutions, but not too many, because they don't usually work anyway. Personal resolutions, I decided, and I got a list here, and I just thought, you might want to know where I stand on some of these things. You might want to think about them. Maybe some you haven't heard of before. But I've sort of been mentioning them and endorsing them. And again, just my opinion alone, not necessarily even John's or the college's here. Personal resolutions are always good. And John, I know you've got some great ones that I think almost everybody could agree with.
Yes, I just think that we should be a little more empathetic toward others. We can also help ourselves out by just thinking stronger and more positive thoughts rather than the negative right away. And I also, you know, continue to work on eating better and drinking better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Those are good things for lots of people's systems as
healthy
we go.
Healthy food, healthy beverages, and healthy thoughts, too.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think my resolutions, I decided that these are things I'd like to continue to work on and in some way. And, of course, you know, if we don't have total power or $10 billion, there's only so many things we can do. I'll share a joke with you, a political joke that I saw as a cartoon after my list is up here. Coronex resolutions to work for. Universal single-payer health care. We all get the drugs we need and the medical care we need for free. I know it's not free. The government pays for it. But we changed the whole system. Everybody covered equally. Of course, if you're super rich, you can get those special operations in the Philippines if you really want them. But that's up to you. But basically, health care coverage for all paid for by the government. Yes, we'd have to pay a little bit more in taxes. And probably we should consider a fair tax system so that the rich have to pay their fair share, too. That's another proposal, which I call it Institute the Fair Tax, F-A-I-R, capital, all capital letters. A couple of politicians have talked about it for years. Mike Huckabee, I know he's not leading in any polls. A few of the Republicans running are in favor of a flat tax, which I don't think is as good as the fair tax. You have to read about it, fairtax.com or .org, something like that, which would end the IRS. It would end federal tax collection once a year and end withholding from your pay. Okay, so you get a full pay every month. You don't even miss that money probably because it just isn't automatically not there, but you would get every penny. But then taxes on everything you buy, everything, would be paid when you buy it. So if the rich buy more and more expensive stuff on homes, on cars, they would pay more. They can't get out of it. And no computation needed once a year. Now, all the tax accountants can find other ways to streamline business. They wouldn't be out of a job at all, folks. They'd be needed more than ever. for efficiency and streamlining, you know, cost containment issues, they wouldn't have to worry about taxes. Although a lot of those tax lawyers, they'd have to reorient themselves. And what would happen to all those tax prep service people? I'm sorry, but we could phase it in, you know. But we have to actually, by the way, take that nasty amendment out of our Constitution that allowed for federal taxation. It wasn't in the Constitution originally.
No.
It was in the Bill of Rights somewhere, or later. No, it was later.
Later.
Much later.
Yep.
It was the 19th century, early 19th century, early 20th century, excuse me, I think, or late 19th, whatever, early 20th century, I believe, when it was put in place. So they have to repeal that at the same time that they put a new system in, whether it's a flat tax or a fair tax. That would very quickly, without any 67,000 pages of exceptions and exemptions and credits, 67,000 pages. I'm told there's no tax lawyers even read all 67,000. And yet there they are, mostly credits and benefits for rich people and their corporations. And all gone, all gone. Equity in taxation. And everybody pays tax up front. Now, with the fair tax, you might say, what about those poor people? They can't afford to pay 20 or 25% tax every time they buy something, because they don't have any money that they're even withholding from, right? They don't have a job or much of a job. So, okay, the fair tax takes care of that. The flat tax doesn't, but the fair tax takes care of that by actually sending every tax, every person in the U.S. a benefit check every month up front. It's called the pre-tax payment. And so, but it would be an amount, even the rich would get these little checks, but it would be the amount calculated that poor people would pay in taxes for housing and food and so on. So how much they spend each year, whatever that level is for poverty, 30,000, 40,000. And of course, it depends on your family size too, that you would get that prebate check coming back to you, paid by the government to you every month to compensate for the poor people who can't afford, you know, barely afford to buy anything, just for the basics, we assume is what they're spending their money on, but that's up to them. So the fair tax is much more fair, and as a proposal, it's been out there for years. We've interviewed people on this show on and off for most every year during tax time, and just think about that, because that would take care of this economic inequity, and everybody pays a fair tax depending on how much they buy. And I think that's the easiest, fastest way to resolve that. Okay, but politically, you have to end redistricting by political parties. You've got to have, and there are proposals for this. Jocelyn Benson, who's the dean of the Wayne State University Law School, she's headed up committees and has nonprofit groups that have come up with independent ways to set up independent groups to redistrict across the U.S. so that everybody gets the right to vote, and it's more equitable in terms of outcomes representing the percentage of the people that support one party or another or no party at all. That has to happen. Is that tough to do? Yes. Hard to explain? Yes, to the average person. But I think the average person knows that when you let political parties draw those redistricting lines, it's always going to benefit them and the Electoral College. We should, that's another, my number three or four, we should end the Electoral College. Again, it would take a change to the Constitution of the United States so that, but we did that for a direct public election of senators, U.S. senators. Yeah. That was in the Constitution. We got rid of that. Let's pass an amendment. Get it done quick. Get the Electoral College out of there. And then every state and every vote in every state matters in the final choice of president of the United States. In terms of voting, it should only be on Sundays. Okay. I think. In other words, a day when a lot of people don't have to work. They should make easier early voting, not tougher early voting. In terms of politicians, we got to end Citizens United. There is end donations by corporations and super PACs. And limit individual contributions to political candidates. and full transparency. So
we know.
Whoever donates whatever amount, the name is there. And no, corporations are not people too, and money shouldn't buy the outcome of elections. Only votes count, and therefore, if every vote counts as one, then everybody can have the same limit, whatever you want, but something that's reasonable. Right now, I still see that my contributions are limited to a couple $1,000s. And how is that possible when corporations and super PACs can donate whatever they want to? No limit. Well, that's not right. You know, that's, and of course, the rich people, they put their money in the super PACs or donate through their corporation that they own. And it's not fully transparent.
There's just too much influence.
The people that are unlimited in making that, because money is power and money does talk. And we shouldn't let money be unrestricted or not open to inspection. That's a full transparency for that.
Well, not only that, but the candidates, they're just candidates are will never run if they know that it's just astronomical to have them the possibility of running.
Yeah.
If they know that there's a much lower ceiling, they're going to give a shot to running for public office.
All the primary races now, there's only who's funding the three remaining Democrats and I guess the 9 or 10 or 12 remaining Republican candidates for president, in the primary situation, it's only 156 people that are providing 80% of the funds now. 156 people in the whole U.S. So just because these people are still running races and elections, and unfortunately I just see that Ben Carson has lost his campaign manager. Can't figure out where to find him. He's lost somewhere. No, he was fired, or he quit. He quit. And his public spokesperson or press conference person, he also quit.
I saw that.
Now they've been replaced.
Okay.
There's always somebody else that's willing to stand up and take the salary. But that's a big upset. But my point is, who are supporting most of these candidates? Well, and it just a fact here, the candidates that's most supported by individual donations, way past all the others is Bernie Sanders. Of course, he will not accept corporate donations. He will not accept super PAC donations. So it's all individual donations, and all last year, almost every month, in fact, and at the end of the year, I'm sure I haven't seen the totals yet, but he will be the most supported by individual, that is, small donations, less than $2,000 each. That means something, right, folks? And it does mean that campaigns don't have to be bought by a few big people. They can be paid for by average people giving small amounts. And anyway, moving on. I think public broadcasting, both TV and radio, especially because of their news, their objective news services, should have their funding increased by the federal government. Okay. I know Republicans won't like that because, if you get those objective reports, they won't agree with Fox News. So we can't let that happen. I think we should. I mean, look at the BBC in England. One of the best news services in the whole world, actually supported by taxes.
Right.
First of all, but their foundation money, taxes from everybody in England that owns a television. Per TV, they have to pay per TV, a separate tax, and it only goes directly to the BBC. It's something like $150 in our money a year because you own a TV. But the money goes to the BBC for radio and TV, and then you say, well, what about the rest of the world? They're paying, the people in England are paying for BBC everywhere in the world? No. Because they're able to pay for their services elsewhere. So BBC America is a paid channel. Okay. If you want BBC News overnight on, for example, WHFR, we'd have to pay for it, you see. And they have a BBC shop, and you can buy Doctor Who souvenirs and other things. I'm not joking. They do have, you go online, you can buy BBC stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. For Downton Abbey, perfume. Or tea for Christmas. And I saw all kinds of Downton Abbey. I don't watch that show, but I'm just saying. Or their murder mysteries. There are all kinds of stuff they sell, paraphernalia. And so they support them. So I think something like 80% comes from sales of their services worldwide. But their basic amount comes from, and which gave them their start, that secure funding from the average people who own televisions in England. Kind of interesting.
Interesting.
I read a book, well, a chapter in a book by Chris Hedges, who's a very, very deep-thinking political writer, Chris Hedges, and I read just a chapter a couple days ago on prisons. And we've got, we have more people incarcerated in the U.S. in our population than any other country in the world.
Wow.
We really have that many criminals here? No, over half of them have never harmed another person. So think about that. What did they do? Well, of course, there's all kinds of ways we overpunish. For years, we were overpunishing people for marijuana, for example. John Sinclair was jailed in Texas for, I think he had a marijuana cigarette, just one, and this is back in the 60s. He got 20 years.
20 years.
20 years. Now, thanks because of rallies nationwide, and including one with John and Yoko, where they had a benefit in Ann Arbor in the late 60s and performed in Ann Arbor, which was broadcast on the old WABX FM live, he was released after only about 8 or 10 years because it just wasn't right. You know, one joint, 20 years, it's crazy. And, of course, many states today have legalized marijuana, so that's even more crazy when you think about the fact there doesn't seem to be any total disarray, falling apart. Can you overdose on marijuana? I guess you could, but anyway, in the three states that have legalized it, so... and I don't, that's not on my list. That's up to you to vote. I think there'll be something on our ballot in 2016, in fact, November, about legalizing marijuana in Michigan. Immigration is a problem. It's got to be resolved. We've got, 20, 30 million illegal aliens in this country. And, Trump and a few others, I'm gonna deport 10 million. Well, these are people already here. They're already contributing. Most of them have jobs. They're not criminals. They're not rapists. Nowhere near the impression that Trump might have given you. And let's make them American. Let's make them U.S. citizens. You know, that road that's been proposed by a few people radically, even Marco Rubio, before he changed his mind for the new election, he was, and he's a son of immigrants, he was for the changes, but they were too liberal to run on in a Republican platform, is to give American citizenship to people after about 7 years of working towards it. I mean, they take the test, they learn about traditions, they get all registered, and they could be legal. Let's do that. Let's embrace the people that are here. Sure, there's always, countries always have rules about new immigration. New nationalization. I, for example, explored in my draft dodging years. No, I never officially dodged the draft in the 60s, but I considered becoming a citizen of Canada. Well, college professor, right? Well-educated. that certain majority race. I think people can guess at what race I am. Well, it was a majority then anyway. And I should be a credit to Canadian society, right? I cannot get citizenship in Canada. Not then, not now.
No.
Because I just wouldn't qualify. They have all these different qualifications for becoming a new citizen of Canada. And I wouldn't qualify. And especially now, because I don't have a full-time job. And of course, they really don't want me to go over there and take away some Canadian's job either.
No.
They're careful of that. So it's not like I could go and kick somebody out of a college teaching job. I think that one of the criteria is if there is a job that can't be filled by a Canadian and it could be filled by you, they put you closer to the top of the list, like picking vegetables in the field or something. I'm not sure. I'm trying to give a U.S. example. But I'm just saying, hey, they've got strict regulations, and yet they can still accept refugees from Syria and other places when the need comes up. So I'm not against having regulation about that, and maybe our border with Mexico is too open, but it's pretty long. I don't know if that, you know, that big wall is going to help if anybody decides to build it. But we can do stuff by welcoming and enculturating new members of our society. I thought we were the country that's supposed to have done that. That's how that's how a lot of us from European countries got here. We needed to emigrate, and we needed to escape, and by golly, we were accepted here. Moving on, better fund public education, like Detroit, duh, and other schools that have been cut. Yes, they have been. I'll stand on that record, and so will our superintendent, local superintendent Malico, and others, our head of Michigan Board of Education, who came from Dearborn, of course, Brian Whiston, has said that over the last 10 years, support, public financing of public education in Michigan has not gone up. Hasn't gone up. Oh, it's trickled up a little, but it went down so much. And teacher salaries have gone down. And benefits for teachers, one reason they might take lower pay is good benefits or good retirement, have gone down. The whole system is falling apart, and we're not funding public education where it should be. What about free college tuition? Absolutely. Absolutely. For those that qualify, there's a reason to qualify, right? I think we should pay off. So where's the money going to come from? Again, cheaper in the long run, folks. Pay off all current student loans.
Forgiveness of student loans.
Forgiveness, yep. Yeah. And I know a lot of banks won't like that, but you can pay them a couple pennies on a dollar. What the heck? Of course, cleaner, safer air, water, food for the whole society. We've got to regulate. We've got to enforce the regulations. Use less energy. Go renewable, of course. I'm going to try to continue going as vegetarian as I can. Mm-hmm. Not just because it's more healthful, but because it's uses less energy too to eat vegetables and fruits in the majority, if you can find them freshly grown. Eat organic things, eat local. End political term limits, except for the president. I still think for the president of the United States, the two terms probably the best idea. You don't want a dictator. Don't encourage that, you know. But for all other offices. When I was growing up, you could consider a full-time career as a politician. Mm-hmm. Now, you might go from one office to another, but you might want to stay in that office, like John Dingell did,
right
after his dad for 50 years. He knows how the system works. Now, you might say, well, he got a little bit disillusioned, or yes, he did, sure, after all the time. But he knew how to compromise, and he would have said that. He would say that today if he come on the show. He knew how to get legislation done, even if it wasn't perfect. It was some movement towards what should be better. Certainly, he was very happy because even his dad was for universal single-payer health care. And when Dingell took over, I think in 48, from his father, that was his main goal. And, of course, we have, thanks to Affordable Health Care Act, Obamacare, as it's called, we have at least 10 million more covered. But what about the 30 million that aren't? That's still not there yet. And I'm sure he would like to see universal single payer. And in general, of course, and you say, well, you're talking about WHFR here, but sure, support in any way I can all alternative music artists who are not in the mainstream, mm-hmm. but deserve to be, and non-commercial media, like WHFR, mm-hmm. and WDET, and all the other great non-commercial media that do it because you donate and you support them along the way. Therefore, they're not beholden to anybody except you, and they're objective and fair and opening up your mind and opening up through music and ideas. So do what you can there. Oh, I skipped one, kind of personal, but gee, I'm in favor of bicycles. I love bicycles. We need some decent bike paths in Dearborn for transportation, not just recreation, bicycles for transportation, even this time of year. As long as there's not a lot of ice or snow, if you're pumping the pedals, you're not going to really get too cold. Oh, yeah, you need warm gloves, and you got to cover your face and maybe put leggings on temporarily. But it's possible to do. They even have these bikes, and I'm looking into one of them, with big, fat tires that people ride, and the tires are like 4 or 5 inches wide. Boy, talk about getting exercise. I bet they're a pain to pedal, but still, they can get through sand if you're going to want to go on a beach sometime, but also through snow. Mm-hmm. And I remember riding a balloon tire bike in winter to school because it lived about 2 miles away from my high school, and I had a 26-inch bike, but it wasn't real skinny tires, so they were about an inch or two wide. They were balloon tires, but I was able to ride even with ice on the sidewalks. I had to really be good at balance, and of course I was young and and quick, I guess, in high school, or quicker than now, certainly. And but I did it every day, even through snow and ice. John, you have a story like that?
Well, I had fat surface tires as well, and I did my newspaper route in those growing up in Connecticut.
So, yes.
You know, the age of 13, 14, my legs were strong from being able to use those.
Go visit your local bike dealers. And, of course, if you're out of shape, you know, you just can't go into biking in traffic or something right away. And it certainly a bit risky if the cars are skidding around to be riding on the main roads. That's why we need bike paths. And we need more safe ways for bicyclists to share the road with the drivers. Okay. And finally,
last thing about just a local thing about our bicycles. We have a new bicycle museum on Gross Hill.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't even know we had one locally anywhere.
It's there on Macomb and open by appointment only.
By appointment only.
Right, but there's probably 25 to
30. So the history of bicycles.
History of bicycles and racing bikes, pedaling bikes.
It seems to me that Henry Ford Museum at the Henry Ford here in Dearborn, that they have some older bikes. I'm not sure they have a definitive historical collection, though.
Yep. Well, they do have a collection as well. But
okay. Is there an admission? I mean,
there's no admission.
No admission.
Just like I said, by appointment only, according to the.
So look that up, folks. Grossy Old Township. And they're not a city yet.
No.
And it's just called Bicycle Museum.
Grossy Old Bike Museum.
Bike Museum. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great. January 1st, what do you think Pope Francis said in his message to the world? Well, first of all, January 1st is also known as World Peace Day. That is something that is a worldwide designation. Not every country may respect it, but what a great idea. Okay. And what he says is overcome indifference and win peace. Of course, he says, God is not indifferent. God cares about mankind. God does not abandon us. And he says he wants to share that conviction as long as good wishes for everyone. I'm paraphrasing here. We must maintain our reasons for hope. So that's the point. Maybe he said, well, there's war everywhere. There's no hope to ever get peace. He said, well, you know, war and terrorism, that's what will happen. It can kill hope. But we must keep hoping and working. And one of his examples is, of course, the what was called COP21, which is a climate change conference that they had in early December. And he thinks that that's a lot of hope to ameliorate global warming. And, of course, he says 2015 was a special year, the 50th anniversary of two documents from the Second Vatican Council, which expressed the solidarity with the world. Pope John the 23rd, one of the great popes in my personal mind, at the beginning of the council, wanted to open wide the windows of the church and to improve her communication with the world. So anyway, the whole idea is don't be cynical, stay positive, keep hoping and working for peace in any way that you can. And I think John and I were talking earlier, imagine every day trying to treat other people with understanding and compassion. At the local level, on a personal level, too. Don't speak as loudly. Don't be so belligerent or so opinionated necessarily. Listen and collaborate and do everything you can locally as well as maybe nationally and internationally if you have those connections or you're able to vote or whatever. Well, and this is not a religious sentiment, but God bless Pope Francis. I'm sure God does within his context of religious beliefs and so on for his opinions and his strong expression of them as a world leader. Okay. Here's the funny thing, the joke. And this is from Tom Tomorrow. He's a cartoonist.
Oh, yeah.
So that's looking forward, right? He's always looking forward,
right.
As if cartoons can change the world. Well, he has a lot of, he's got a chart cartoon panel here that is called the 2015 Year in Review, and part the first. And I don't know if there will be another one next week, but Tom Tomorrow, you can look this up on the internet and read his cartoons. I think some of the original dates are actually true, maybe not. For example, February 19th of 2015, Mother Jones magazine debunks Bill O'Reilly's claim that he experienced combat. And of course, O'Reilly said, well, I was in the middle of the Falklands War, or at least in the same hemisphere. No, that's the joke part, of course, where he adds the comments, the response. But that, I know that was actually true, is that besides, of course, the NBC host, how soon I forget his name, I don't want to say the wrong name. I'll soon we forget. He's on CNBC now. But he was removed because he said his helicopter was attacked in Iraq with bullets. It was actually the helicopter in front of his helicopter. Well, I'd say that's pretty close. That must have been, you know, pretty upsetting. Oh, my God, that chopper is going down. It's taking fire, you know.
Talking about Brian Williams.
Brian Williams. Here we go. Okay. I don't think he should be removed. Actually, nobody removed Bill O'Reilly, and he was not even anywhere near when he was reporting the Falklands War, which was, you remember, was about a little offshore island off of Brazil, I think it was, or Argentina.
Argentina,
yep. Right. Mm-hmm. And the British still were trying to flaunt their control over this little dippy island when they had lost their empire everywhere else in the world. But they did win, sort of. But and O'Reilly was reporting that, but he wasn't anywhere close, and yet he claimed he was. Well, the joke is that on June 29th of this year, last year, Trump, that's right, Donald Trump, promised to change hairstyle if elected president. Now, I don't think he did that. I don't think he did. I think it's a joke here. Well, his explanation in the cartoon is, he says, I'll save hours a day, and I'll use those hours to make America great again. I can't do an impersonation of his accent, but which is not American, is it? That Brooklyn accent, is Brooklyn an American? Well, I guess it's one American accent.
Yeah.
But, yeah, somebody spends hours a day, and I'm sure he doesn't, massaging his comb-over to look like that. Yeah, imagine if all of a sudden became president, he just shaved it off. You know, he's baldy. Donald the Bald. Well, once you're president, what the hell? What can they do to you? You know, you notice that Obama didn't start going gray until the second term.
It took a while.
Which means he was coloring his hair all the way through the first term so he could look younger to get reelected. That happens frequently. You look at all recent presidents, they get really gray in the second term. Not because their life is so hard, but it is. That's a stressful job. But their hair never changed color in the first term.
No.
Oh, no. Well, maybe second a little term. Fleck of gray. Just a little accidental fleck. It's the second term because they stopped dyeing it. So I hope if Trump does go on that he does get a haircut so that he doesn't have any more jokes about the hair. It's just policy, you know. But don't forget, we have, a primary in Michigan, March 8th, I think it is, or it's the 4th. Okay, he's going to look it up now. I don't want to have to do a correction next week after the first show on the air. And boy, I hope I wrote this down. Yes, it is the 8th, the second Tuesday in March 2016. That's when the Michigan primary is. And you could vote either in the Democratic or Republican, but not the Libertarian or the Green Party or any other one because they're not part of it. Why? Because they're not allowed to be. Why? Because the Dems and Republicans don't want to give them any publicity.
No.
There you go. Okay. What else we got, John? Let's move around here.
Yes,
we've got 14 minutes left.
Yep.
We've done the fun stuff. We've done the year in review and all. So go ahead.
Well, we want to talk. We want to continue to promote and talk about our big band, the Henry Ford College Big Band, and the Dearborn High School Jazz Band, and the Utica Eisenhower High School Jazz Ensemble.
What date?
That's going to be
end of January, right?
Yeah, January 30th at 8 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center.
And how good is that going to be? Well, we've got a track here all queued up, which we're going to play. I know it's 4 minutes and 45 seconds, but it's from the Henry Ford Big Band, Henry Ford College Big Band, from their Euro Tour 15. A new CD just came out. I'll tell you how to get it, because it's not distributed in regular stores. Big Band is not considered a commercial sort of thing, but I hope it will get around. But at the end of January, this will be a great live concert, and this was a great tour they did. This was recorded live in Europe, and here's the Henry Ford Big Band under the direction of Ricky Lee Goward. And yes, that's the name he was born with. And it's on the album. He actually has his legal name there as Ricky the producer Lee, and director. But that was his birth name, and we all just called him Rick around here, of course, but Ricky Lee Goward. And so take a listen on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Can't hear this anywhere else on the radio. This is John and Jay back here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. In our last 8 minutes or so from our live January 1st show, how many other professional broadcasters? Are we professionals? Well, they don't pay us to be. Well, I kind of paid a little, but not necessarily to be here today. Nonetheless, we are, and we've got a couple of big stories that you may have caught or not caught. You first, John.
Okay. Michigan's minimum wage rises for the first time since 2014 today. Minimum wage workers in Michigan will see a rise in their paycheck as the minimum wage is increasing for the first time since 2014. The state's hourly minimum wage increases 35 cents from $8.15 to $8.50. That works out to about $14 more a week and $728 more a year for full-time workers. The hourly minimum wage is now up more than a dollar from before September 1, 2014 and will gradually increase every year. It's part of the state's Workforce Opportunity Wage Act of 2014, where the minimum wage is boosted over time.
And for people who are like waiters and bartenders, that at the end there, that went up a few cents from $2 something. You know, it's for occupations, there's still some people believe that because you get tips, you don't need a big minimum wage. And I think that's crazy.
I do too, because the tipped employee hourly minimum wage will also increase from $3.10 to $3.23.
So that's only 13 cents more.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
Okay. I didn't put that on my other list there, but minimum wage should be much higher. Whether it's 10 or 11 or 15, there's arguments about in terms of keeping up with cost of living over the last 10 or 20 years, it should be higher. And there is no evidence, Republicans, no evidence whatsoever that minimum wage causes job loss.
No.
Okay? There's no evidence. I'm sorry. Okay? Things balance out. There's no massive firings of people because the wage goes up, especially if it's incremental. Yes, the cost of doing business goes up a little bit, and maybe some prices go up a little bit, but people deserve a living wage, period.
Well, and to look forward to, also on January 1, 2017, the wage will again increase, this time to $8.40, and then to $9.25 on the January 1st, 2018.
Okay, not much to hope for, but it's something. Let me just state here, and it might be in the Pressing Guide this Sunday, but a good long report in detail by Katie Hetrick for the Dearborn Pressing Guide. Dearborn Heights schools show mixed results in the new M-STEP evaluation tests. So, not surprisingly, Dearborn Heights schools showed mixed results, she concludes in her first statement. And she said, for 11th grade, every Dearborn Public High School was above the state average for the number of students proficient in math and English arts, and three of the four schools were above in social studies. Only Henry Ford Early College was above in all four categories, including science. That is a prestigious program that we offer here alliance with the Dearborn Public Schools. Crestwood High School was above the state in math and English, but what don't they have there? They don't have a planetarium running, they don't teach astronomy, and they don't have a choral group.
But they do have an a cappella choir.
Well, they do now, and we're going to try to feature them on WHFR in the upcoming months. We've made contact, and we're looking forward to their appearance here at the station.
I saw two very fine performances a couple of weeks ago on Saturday, and they were just terrific.
Yep. Annapolis High School, by the way, in Dearborn Heights 7, was below in all four categories. Westwood Community Schools fell short of the mark across in the district in all four of its high school programs. Always been the case there. Too bad somebody can't turn around those districts, maybe with more money. Okay. You know, all we can say is that there's been some increases and some decreases, and M-STEP is new. It's a baseline year for M-STEP, so there's not a good method to evaluate the schools in terms of the past. Still, there shows that some schools are going to have to work a little bit harder.
I've got a few new Michigan laws taking effect in 2016. Let drivers pulled over by police show proof of their auto insurance on a phone or another mobile device instead of having to provide a hard copy.
It's kind of cool. I realize that my proof of insurance, I can do that way, except I just changed to a BlackBerry. Yes, that's right, a BlackBerry. And I don't know how. There's not a BlackBerry way to download to that operating system from my insurance company. So I'm going to stick with a piece of paper folded up into eight segments in my pocket.
Ah, okay. One more. I'll run more here. I'll let people caring for the disabled open tax-exempt savings accounts to pay for the long-term needs of those they care for, including housing and transportation. Another measure will raise the maximum account balance in Michigan's 529 college savings plan from $235,000 to $500,000.
Ooh, that's if you're rich and you've got that much money put in there. Well, thank you. I don't think the rich need that, but nonetheless, it's not a bad idea. Yep. I'd just like to say that this came out in mid-December as an editorial opinion by Gary Warrenchuk, who is our commissioner to Wayne County Commission, government here in Wayne County, and he has also, of course, been appointed by that commission to be the head of the commission. It doesn't state his actual title here, but of course he is the head, the functioning spokesperson for the commission, and he's like the chairperson for all their meetings and so on. Well, he's trying to at least turn around, and I'll just mention it because he says a few Detroit News, that is capital D, capital N, opinion columns were repeated and reported as if they were fact. The editorial stoked the fire that Wayne County commissioners had got big increases in their pays. And then he said it spread to the attention of radio and TV news, the same stories, same opinions, which were inaccurate, and helped spread to social media, and suddenly it started to catch fire. He says there's two truths about news reporting, including the show, by the way. One, information is sometimes inaccurate and more often incomplete. It's difficult to boil down details of some issues within the space and time limitations for each news report. We only have 30 seconds now to go, John. Point number two, people largely believe what they read, especially if it makes them angry. He says, I don't fully understand this phenomenon, even if they read it on the internet. And once they have a negative impression, even if it's based on information they don't know is inaccurate, the impression sticks. Okay, the whole idea is they have not gotten increases in their own salaries. Yes, they do make a nice living, Gary says. He doesn't say how much they make, but they have not gotten any additional health care money in salary at the Wayne County Commission. So we want to set the record straight for the sake of Gary. And wish everyone well for the rest of the year. We're going to be around one way or the other.
And also remember everyone deployed. Wear red on Fridays. That's for our veterans, and Happy New Year to all.
Absolutely. So this is WHFR.FM. Stay tuned. Coming up for Highway 61, the best of the blues from WHFR for 2015 for 4 big hours. It's going to be great. I'm going off with a little theme I've enjoyed, but we'll fade down to Highway 61 theme in a little while. This one is by Amy Grant.
Of trouble, we only had ourselves.